This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. If art and commerce merged a long time ago, maybe they were never really separate, we might be in a new golden age. Some of the coolest music and images I hear and see these days comes from commercials. There's all the indie rock music in ads for banks and cars and long-distance service. There are these truly magnificent, wondrous commercials in Europe for Sony television sets. So today on the show, we are looking at that increasingly blurry line between art and advertising. My guest for the hour is George Lois, the legendary graphic designer and ad executive. His new book is called Iconic America, a roller coaster ride through the eye-popping panorama of American pop culture. George Lois is a master at making provocative, memorable images and lines. Remember, I Want My MTV? That was him. And back in the 1960s, he designed covers for Esquire magazine when it was about the most interesting and important magazine in America, thanks in significant measure to his covers. I spoke with Lois a while back.
I was precocious as a very young boy in drawing, which is something that a lot of art directors today can't do. You know, a lot of graphic people can't draw, which is kind of an oxymoron. But I was drawing and drawing and drawing, spending all my time drawing, playing ball, I was very lucky because I had a public school teacher who came up to me in my last term of a public school and said, George, here's 10 cents, go downtown, go to the High School of Music and Art, take a test. And she gave me a portfolio, a string portfolio, which she had bought, and she opened it up, and there were about 100 of my drawings in there. She said, go down here and take a test. So I went to the High School of Music and Art, probably the greatest school of learning since Alexander sat at the feet of Aristotle, you know. And I learned very early, I, as much as I loved all kinds of art, I started to love artists like Stuart Davis, where he used everyday objects, some to use words, etc. And I looked at the posters of people like Cassandra. I really was very excited about the art that communicated, that tried to do a job, you know. And I just took to it very early, and I knew when I was 15 years old, I wanted to be a graphic designer of sorts. I'm not sure I wanted to be in advertising, but I think it naturally led to being in advertising.
You went the route of graphic design as opposed to pure fine art because you were a guy who liked mixing it up with the real world?
Or? Yeah. I liked printing things. I liked the idea that there wasn't TV at the time, you know, but I just liked getting a problem and solving it. I like the whole idea of cause and effect, you know. I mean, to this day, somebody said, do something great, George. I said, huh? You know, give me a problem. You know, give me a subject. Give me, who would I want to convince to do something?
You know? What was the first campaign you did that is part of the iconic canon of advertising that we remember today?
There were iconic ads that dramatically changed advertising, like in 1960 when I started. For instance, I did an ad in the days of Ross Reeves and the days of, banging headaches, you know, and all these terrible commercials with the hammers hitting your head, et cetera, in drug advertising. I did an ad for a cold ad.
Only people over 45 will remember those little animations of heads of hammers going off as animations on people's
and
heads.
And Ross Reeves called it unique USP, unique selling proposition. And they had to come up with jargon and they had to come up with research. And they had to prove to their clients and to the world that advertising was a science. And advertising is so far from a science, it isn't funny. Advertising is an art, you know. So I did an ad for Coldine, and it was a black page. And it just said, John, is that Billy coughing? And there's a quote, and a man's voice obviously says, get up and give him some Coldine. And that was the whole ad against this black background. Actually, it was a photograph, so he was like, the image was that it was at night. And Ad Age went crazy. And they said, oh, my God, what are these young creative people doing? They're destroying advertising. There's no logo. There's no body copy. There's no hoo-ha. There's no this. There's no that. And meanwhile, it's coldly sold like there was no tomorrow. The name of the game was doing the advertising correctly. advertising in and of itself can become a benefit of the product. And it's the main point about what advertising is. It can make the product taste better, you know, can make a car run better, et cetera.
So the advertising becomes part of the brand experience,
sure.
to use
now,
the...
Now, you're not taking something and making it a bad product good. What goes on in marketing in America is there's three or four or five products that are basically just as good as each other. Your job, my job has always been take one of them, take the one that is given to you, and get the perception of that to be better than the others. Not to lie about it, just to introduce an element of it that becomes almost a driving a theme or a driving ethos of what it's about.
So you started your agency. Then did Esquire hire you?
No, what happened? I guess it was Harold Hayes called me. Harold Hayes and Clay Felker called me up. They were co-editors at that time. Anyway, they came to me, they called me up, and they said, give us some advice on how we can make the covers better. I said, well, why don't you just give it to one designer, you know, and keep your editors out of it. He said, well, one designer? I said, well, you find a guy who's got graphic talent, he understands politics, you know, who understands advertising too, because you can't offend clients. I mean, you got to have a kind of a rounded kind of idea. Because in doing the covers, if you want to do great covers, you should be marketing your book. And I said, well, he said, could you do us one as an example? I said, okay, I'll do one. So he gave me the assignment right there, you know, and he gave me all the topics. And one of them was a Bud Schulberg story, you know, on boxing, et cetera, et cetera. And I got the date when it would come out, and I'm walking back, and I said, gee, that date looks familiar. That date looks like it's right before the big Liston-Patterson fight that was coming up.
Sonny Liston and Floyd Patterson.
Right.
The great fight of its time.
And Patterson was favored 10-1. You know, Liston supposedly didn't have a chance. I knew Sonny Liston was going to kill him. I mean, I was a good friend of Floyd, you know, and I loved the kid, but I knew he was going to get destroyed. So I went and did a cover, and I got a guy who was built like Floyd. I wanted to shoot down empty stands where you could see that there's empty your seats, and there's a fighter left for dead, and it was Floyd, you know. So the cover came out, and it basically predicted the fight. Arnold Gingrich, the publisher, saw the cover, and he said, what are you, crazy? You're predicting a fight? We'd look like fools. Now, you can't do that. What? I mean, blah, 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 blah. And Harold said, no, this is exciting. It's a dramatic event. Anyway, what happened is the cover came out. There was big stories all over the Associated Press, all over America. Esquire had the hubris to predict the fight, blah, 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 blah. And at the same time, and everybody said that Floyd was going to whip Liston. And, of course, Liston beat him and, you know, knocked them down three times in the first round. And at that point, you know, they sold another $150,000 on the newsstand. And so Harold came back to me and said, George, could you keep doing them?
And the great thing about that cover and your subsequent covers for Esquire is that they were so unlike what was being done at the time, as they're these sort of self-contained, witty posters, works of art on their own terms. Did you have a sense at the time as you were doing these amazing covers that they were essentially becoming, you know, the graphic identity for a certain part of the 1960s?
Yeah, I think I did. And there were certain ones that I said, this is it. I mean, this says all you have to say about it. I mean, Andy Warhol drowning in a gigantic can of soup is all you have to say about pop.
So it's a big tomato soup can, Campbell's tomato soup can with Andy drowning in it.
Drowning, and you know, waving his hand. And by the way, not before, you know, computer.
You can do, any kid with a computer.
And not a fake. I mean, I got Andy to do it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? I said, Andy, but I explained it to him. He said, oh, great. You know. I mean,
so how did that work? You actually manufactured a giant can of soup?
No, just shoot a can of soup, right? You drop a stone in it so it makes that beautiful impression. Get Andy to a photo studio, shoot down at him, you know, looking up, flailing, you know, wig ablaze. And in those days, you couldn't do it with a computer, so you had to do it with something called a C-print, and it had to be printed together and retouched. So it was difficult, but technically it was done perfectly. But a lot of images that, I mean, you know, Nixon being made up on a plane, you know, because he had looked bad. There was a lot of images there that I knew when they came out. Lieutenant Calley sitting with four Vietnamese kids that he killed, You know, that says all there is to say.
Well, that was after the Lieutenant Calley, who was in the Army in Vietnam, was charged and prosecuted for killing civilian children. And that was one of those covers that was really shocking at the time. And I'm sure people said, oh, this is in bad taste. We had those breakthroughs. I don't know that you could go to a newsstand today and find any cover among the hundreds of magazines there that are even attempting that kind of thing.
Well, the point is, I think that they're all infatuated with, or they all believe that celebrity, pure celebrity, sells copies. And of course, it might be true, but not when there's 80 magazines and they all got the same flavor of the month, or somebody, what they think is the flavor of the month. And not only do they have who they think might be hot that month, but they have, you know, about 20 blurbs in case, you know, you don't like that, you might like this.
As opposed to what you did is have one strong idea, take a celebrity, usually, and twist or subvert the image.
Yeah, I did a lot of celebrity covers. I mean, right after the Beatles were introduced, you know, supposedly by Ed Sullivan, the next month I had a picture of Ed Sullivan with a big silly grin, you know, with wearing an actual Beatles wig, you know.
My guest today is George Lois. We are talking about art and advertising. And in a minute, we'll hear what the Pottery Barn and 17th century fruit have in common. Stay with us in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International.